it is criminal in the extreme, but it's in keeping with the other things they've done throughout history. And I got to say, Andrew, you know, the chronology of these crimes and the people involved is so damning that it shocks me to think that we can't get more people to pay attention to these facts. It really shocks me.
Oh, it does with me as well, Darrell. And as I say, we've talked about before about people really need to give the time to look at these things and don't believe everything that we say. Do your own research. And if you do your own research, and if you're something that either Darrell or I say, you think, oh, this can't be right, write it down, look it up. This is how I did my book. I used to listen to not just Darrell, but I listened to all sorts of lots of presenters from other radio stations. And as time goes on, you just find them. I listen to about three or four now because the rest are liars. It's as simple as that. And you only find that out when you start to do your own work. And this is what I encourage people to do, because once they do that, then it will empower them to think, hey, you know, we're part of something here that can actually get this out to people. And it is fun to actually expose these people, because you suddenly realise that all the things that you've been told in history class and by the media and that is actually a lie. And the truth is a lot easier to find than people think it is.
Well, and you know, all they need to do is make people uninterested in doing any kind of learning, and which has been the case throughout with you know, what hair colour is Brittany got, or did she get taken away from her home, or, you know, Paris Hilton wets the bed or something. And all this nonsense gets passed on to the mainstream, or they can get you, you know, the great circus going on with sports, which I admit, you know, I have a penchant for a good football game myself. The saddest part about all that, though, is that people exclude other activities of learning for these kinds of endeavors, and the end result is that people don't have a thirst for knowledge. This is the problem. It's not necessarily that we can't find the information. It's that no one is interested in looking into it in the first place. We can't get people excited about finding the facts about the world around them. And that's one of our biggest challenges. And Andrew, I've thought of a million ways of trying to draw people into these facts, and each and every one of them has a drawback, that people just don't have a personal interest in facts.
Well, I'm thinking about it now. I mean, for example, I'll probably go and watch if there's a football game on the television tonight that I might go and watch, but I'll do certain things at certain times, and I'll set other time aside to look at this information and try and learn more and more all the time, because we're always learning about this as every day goes on. But I think it's the other thing that, of course, they do is they'll promote things like video games. I mean, when I was younger, it was all these, you know, video games are things that children played. And, you know, but now you've got adults in their 50s, 60s playing them and spending hours and hours and hours on them. And, of course, it's like anything like that. All you're going to do there is you're going to shoot them up here or drive a race car around on this video game, and you're accomplishing absolutely nothing. And so what people need to do is, they can have the hobbies that they have, but it would be good if they could just listen to these shows in their car rather than the sports radio or whatever, and give it a few hours a week or whatever to spend time thinking to themselves, what did I hear on these shows and what would I like to look into, and start doing a bit of research, and you might stumble upon a book that you're interested in. Just look at these sort of things, and it really is empowering when you start to find out this information and you feel, hey, I've learned something here, rather than just sat around and, you know, done nothing, essentially.
Well, there was a book that came out, and I don't want to pass over this too lightly, but a book came out about the actions of the Allied forces under Eisenhower, and one of the things that it points out was that 9 million, as many as 9 million Germans were starved to death or intentionally allowed to die after the war. And, you know, we always hem and haw about the people that the Nazi regime took out their aggressions on, and of course we know many of the financing deals that were done for the German war machine were done through Zionist criminal banks. At the same time, after the war, there was a mass murder of a genocide of German populace, up to 9 million. And yet, with that knowledge and with that fact, this man came back to America and was placed in the role of president of the United States. The man who did this, and he was described in his yearbook at West Point as the little Jew.
Yeah, it was the terrible Swedish Jew, I think was the expression.
The terrible Swedish Jew, okay.
This was Eisenhower. Now, this book, written by James Bark, is an excellent book, and it's readily available. The interesting, there's a quote here, and the quote is from the guy who wrote the foreword. And he rose to the position of senior historian in the United States Army. And he retired as a colonel. His name was Ernest F. Fisher. He had a PhD. And he wrote the following in the foreword to James Bark's book that we're referring to. Starting in April 1945, the United States Army and the French Army casually annihilated about 1 million men, most of them in American camps. Eisenhower's hatred passed through the lens of a compliant military bureaucracy, produced the horror of death camps unequaled by anything in American military history, an enormous war crime. So this is a senior historian, United States Army, retired as a colonel, PhD. So, you know, as I say, this is a guy writing in the foreword. So, again, the facts just stand on their own.
Well, you know, nothing new under the sun here, and we're facing a new group of criminal Zionist leaders, but yet their thirst for criminal activity and blood has not changed. I want to get right up in here into the 1989 period here, where you talk about it says the satellite states of Eastern Europe. Now, of course, we had the fall of the wall of the Iron Curtain, if you will allow that term to still be used. This was a decided event. In other words, everybody tends to believe that the release of those people from bondage, if you will, was a kind of a happenstance or a historical event that just culminated in their release. The fact was, this stuff was orchestrated, and the people who came down like vultures on those societies immediately in the aftermath are still doing their dirty work to this day. Want to talk a little bit about it?
Yes, exactly. And I mean, you know, communism was always going to have its end because they didn't manage to get communism all around the world overtly. They looked at the American system, and they looked at the communist system. And whereas communism was overt, the American system, which is all about control as well, the so-called democratic system, is far easier to control because you give people then the illusion that they have free choice when they're choosing from two parties controlled by the same people. Whereas communism was always, oh, they haven't got freedom. So they realized that didn't work, so this had to go. Another interesting thing, when communism fell in Russia, there was a mass exodus of 700,000 Jews who ended up moving to Israel. And you probably remember in America, there were always adverts asking people to donate money to help Jews settle in Israel.
Mm-hmm.
And things like that. So, you know, the begging and what have you never seems to end to try and get as much money as possible out of people. And again, people just need to look at the facts of today and see how the so-called democracy in Russia worked. We talked about Putin earlier, and it's very difficult to put your finger onto what this guy really is doing. But what is clear is that the Rothschild-fronted oligarchs, six of seven of which were Jewish, picked up their energy companies and what have you for absolutely next to nothing, and made billions and billions out of them before they were taken off them.
Yeah.
And so, again, you've got the same situation of the exploitation that goes on.
Well, we'll get back to the South American side of things and talk a little bit about the Kirchner government and these different governments that are run by Murano and Zionist criminal Jews, knowing that the drug trade has always been in their hands. And they began networking drugs into the United States through the 1980s and into the 90s. And, of course, Panama became a central shipping point for that. always going through the Jewish hands in Mexico and Mexico City, which some of the most powerful Zionists in the world are housed in Mexico City. And, of course, many of the people who have been identified from the Jewish community as having been involved in some of the criminal activity in South and Central America have escaped back to Israel to avoid a prosecution, or turned in their collaborators as the principals rather than take the blame themselves. And in one instance, Noriega comes to mind.
Well, Noriega was, of course, the figure that was, they made films out of this and all sorts about this General Noriega, this Panamanian sort of leader, etc. But you've probably never heard of a guy called Mike Harari.
No.
Who actually is referred to on the newswire as a shadowy former officer of Israel's Mossad intelligence service who became one of Noriega's most influential advisors. Now, an official from the American Installed Administration in Panama following the taking of Noriega claimed that apart from Noriega, Harari was the most important person in Panama. Now, the interesting thing is whilst Noriega would be extradited to America and jailed, Harari disappeared under mysterious circumstances only to resurface in Israel. However, they've never sought Harari's extradition to face charges in the U.S. So again, it goes to show that you do get treated differently if you're in Israel to if you're in any other country.
Yeah. Well, they invaded that little speck of earth with a full brunt of the American military to take Noriega back to America, and this other guy doesn't even get honorable mention in the world of criminality. Let's move forward here to here we are, 1990, by way of deception, is written by Arshevsky. Again, I don't know how honest this guy has been. I sometimes wonder about the fact that he's still alive. I mean, why would they allow him to be? They've gone to any ends to get people they want to kill. Sometimes I wonder about his veracity, but at the same time, some of the things he said make perfect sense. You want to talk a little bit about some of the things he claims in his book?
Well, the interesting thing about Ostrovsky is he wrote two books. He wrote By Way of Deception, then he followed it up with The Other Side of Deception. Now, both of these books are out of print. He's still in Canada, I believe, and he now works as an artist, like a painter and things like that. He did have his house burnt down. He had his daughter applied for a job, and she was, when they found out who's, you know, it was in media, funnily enough, and found out who her father was, and she wasn't given that job. So, yeah, I agree with you, Darrell. But as we know, we can read books by different people, and suddenly they can turn out to be disingenuous. But certainly what he says seems to come to pass. But the interesting thing that he says here, and I just went into that little thing about him, because my view is maybe they've sort of said, don't say anything else about us, and we won't say anything about you. Or do anything to you. You know, the books are out there. They can't stop them from going round now. They're out there. I've got a second-hand copy somewhere of both of them. So the damage is done. So, yeah, they could go and take him out, but it's out of revenge. If they knew he was going to write another one, then they might go and get him.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I would say, it doesn't mean, you know, I'm going off his information here. But certainly an interesting thing that he talks about is about the Sayanim that you mentioned earlier. And it's important that the Sayanim, what they are, is the Mossad use Sayanim. And Sayanim are people that must be 100% Jewish, and they live all around the world. And so although they're not Israeli citizens, they'll be living in all sorts of countries. Now, for example, as we know, the Mossad operates in all countries. And in his book, he claims that in London alone, there are about 2,000 people who are Sayanim, so they're 100% Jewish, and they work for the Mossad at the drop of a hat. And the sort of things that they'll do is that you might have a Sayanim who owns a car rental agency, and they could help a Mossad agent rent a car without any documentation. They might have a Sayanim who works at a bank, and they can get you money at a drop of a hat. a doctor who could treat a bullet wound in the middle of the night without any report to the police. You talked earlier as well about Sarkozy going to one of those youth camps in Israel.
Yes.
Now, what he says here, and it's the quote on page 292, many of the youths trained at the summer camps in Israel later become Sayanim, and it certainly provides a strong group of willing helpers, well-trained, undaunted by the lingo, the language, who have already shown the ability to take chances. And then we look at the group Birthright Israel that offers free holidays to Israel for Jews resident throughout the world between the ages of 18 to 26. And what they say on their official website, if you just type in Birthright Israel into Yahoo, the aim of this group, and it gives free holidays to Jews resident throughout the world, is to strengthen the sense of solidarity amongst world Jewry. And so what we have here, it's very interesting. You mentioned Sarkozy as a youth, and we know his links to the Mossad. And that just goes on to show this Sayanim group that are prepared to help them. Again, believing they've got to stand with these people, that to be Jewish means you have to be Zionist.
Well, you know, we're coming to the end of our little segment here, and the fact is, I want to mention a few things before we go to the end of the program here, is that this information, when you listen to this file, hopefully you'll listen to it more than once if you're interested in confirming the information. There's almost no doubt that we've nailed this. Andrew, even if, let's say, we were only 90% correct, or let's say 80, or let's say 70, let's be ridiculous and say only half correct. That means that some of these are the most notorious and virulent crimes of our lifetimes and before, and they were perpetrated by Zionist criminal Jews. And here's the problem. Most people don't know it. Now, I'm telling you that 95 to 100% of what we're saying is correct. So the problem is even double where we should be outraged by it. Where is the outrage, ladies and gentlemen? Begin your own research and then begin a knowledge of these facts sufficient to start being able to parrot this information to those around you who are not aware of these facts. Drop a couple of the facts on people and say, did you know that such and such and such, did you know that 8 million Germans were murdered after the war by President Eisenhower? No, by the way, did you know he was Jewish? These kinds of things need to be shared with people who are just coming to the facts or wanting information, Andrew, because we need to expand our base. We need a larger number of people involved in this fight. And the only way they're going to do it is through a sense of outrage, because that's what brought me to this fight, was I had a sense of outrage of what I was seeing happening. And I started my learning process at that point. And so this same introductory thing needs to be started now in earnest with more people, both in Europe and America and around the world, for people listening around the world. The entire world needs to wake up to what criminal Zionist Judaism has done and intends to do in its future. And I don't know any better way to do it but than to try to begin to feed people small bits of this stuff and ask them to look themselves and ask them to feel outrage alongside you. What do you think?
Well, I agree with you, Darrell. And again, echoing what you said, if the information that you and I have found out is the information that we can find that's freely available, then I dread to think what's gone on behind the scenes that they're sitting on in national secrecy. If all the stuff that we've been able to find as it is bad enough, so what aren't they telling us? And the other thing I would suggest to people is if they want to sort of go out and read a thriller or something like Stephen King, then they should look at Archibald Moore Ramsey instead. It's a lot more scary and a lot more entertaining if you're after being scared and worried, because, you know, people want to search out all these mainstream things, but if you look at these books like you have on your site, they're far more fascinating, they're documented, they're they teach you history. You thought you knew history until you read these people. And when you're reading books by people, you know, going back right to early last century, and these people are talking about exactly what we're talking about now, why aren't they heard now? Well, the books aren't in print now. Why aren't they in print? Who owns the publishing houses? The rights will be owned by different groups, and they're not going to publish them because it tells a story that they don't want to be told.
Well, and it's also interesting that... It's also interesting, Andrew, that the French Connection website is one of the only sites on Earth that is putting these books out. Well, and being willing to spend the time with listeners to say, listen, you know, you've really got to pay attention to this information or that information, because it is the historic link, I believe, to our present conditions in the world that is going to make people really understand that this is not just a modern day problem, but a problem that has been plaguing mankind for generations, if not for millennia. And I got to say, the hour is late, because if this financial system goes the way I think it may, each and every one of us are going to be so busy trying to feed ourselves that we may not have the wherewithal to fight back. And while we have the moment to fight, we should be using every moment as if it were precious to win this battle. Because like I said, once you're scraping for some food, you're not going to have time to do battle with these people. Either that, or you're going to be really angry and start really going crazy. But the fact is that this fight needs to be taken to them now. We can't wait on this.
Yes, I agree, Daryl. And people do have the opportunity. We've said everything we can to try and get people to take more time. Please try your best to just wake people up around you. If you don't have time to look at research this stuff yourself, then burn off some CDs for people and give them to people. Say, listen to this, check this out. Give them the link to Daryl's site, etc. And just please, if you could all do something tonight, send Daryl a donation. He runs a non-for-profit site, and the donations help get the books up there that in turn wake people up so he can do his radio shows and things like that. If each and every one of you out there can help in some way or another tonight, then it would be so much appreciated, and you will all benefit from that.
Well, you know, my big thing now is that I've got a computer that has no audio, and my whole thing, it looks like I'm going to have to get another one. And of course, this is an up in my loft kind of operation here. We're hand to mouth, and we took on the responsibility, Andrew, of a book repository, because it provided us with some of the books that we're talking about in these files, as well as the opportunity to provide people with a foundation that was based in non-for-profit, because we're not a profitable organization here. This is not a for-profit deal. And so we have a rental responsibility we picked up with these folks, and we're taking care of that, as well as the streaming that has been going on 24/7 on the Shoutcast, which I can no longer listen to because my computer won't let me. All of this stuff, I mean, it's not a big operation, and if you just sent $5, $2, $3, $4, $5, $10, $20, and people have, but the amount that is coming in is adding up to a few $100, and that's not enough for us to keep it going. And you know, there are moments when people give very generously, and then there's others when they don't give very much at all. And I understand Christmas time and the inflation and everything is keeping people. Their wallets closed up, but we sure could use a buck or two if you got a chance for it. Andrew, I want to thank you again. As always, a very, very informative, just really incredible stuff. And in a couple of weeks or so, I'd like to do the next installment. This has been a really great idea to do this, because when people listen to this file, the first thing that strikes me when I have listened back to these others is just the sheer volume of criminality these people have been involved in. That's what strikes me first.
Well, yes, and I mean, as I said on other shows, what I tried to do is try to summarize different things that can happen. You can look at one page of my book and read about, say, the USS Liberty, and people have written whole books about that that I have on one page, and I encourage people to read the whole books, but the idea of my book is to really just go, you know, show people all in a row in a timeline all these things that are going on. Then they might say, oh, this looks interesting. I'm quite interested in this topic. And then they'll read on that, and they might even find out a lot of information about that and put something to them themselves, and then it gives us more information and more ammunition to show to the world what these people are really doing. So it was just really a summary of all different things. I mean, I must have read over 100 books, listened to thousands of hours of radio, spent countless time on the internet looking at different things, and this was the result of it. And I just hope that people can take this and they can see different parts of it and do further research, and it can be used to get a better story out there.
Well, it's worked for me. I've read your book cover to cover twice, and I'm going over it again with you for a third time, and it strikes me every time the sheer volume of crimes that have been committed. And just in my memory, this is not before my lifetime, but during my lifetime.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank you all for listening in today to this broadcast of The French Connection, and please look forward to more of them. We try to put as many up as we can that are interesting and moving the ball forward. But until the next time, please care for your families and take care of the things around you, because this is the time now, ladies and gentlemen, for you to do your best effort. Until the next time. Daryl Bradford Smith telling you, be well. Bye-bye now.
Bite the lip and take the trip. Though there may be wet road ahead and you cannot slip, just move on up, for peace you'll find. Enter the steeple of beautiful people where there's only one kind. So hush now, child, and don't cry. Your folks might understand you by and by. Move on up and keep on wishing. Remember your dream is your only scheme, so keep on pushing. Take nothing less than the supreme best. Do not obey, no mistake for safe, but you can pass the test.